millions of people are living better. They are enjoying a healthier lifestyle, learning more about overcoming obstacles and keeping a positive outlook. Now you can be a member of the club. This is the Living to 100 Club with Dr. Joe Casciani. Our guests share incredible stories and advice, bring new outlooks on wellness, and show you how to keep moving forward. Now, here is your host, Dr. Joe Casciani.
Well, good day to all of our listeners joining us for this live radio episode. I'm your host, Joe Casciani, and this is the Living to 100 Club program on the Voice America Network Health and Wellness Channel. Thanks for tuning in. Before I introduce our guest, I want to remind everyone about our new website filled with information created from my blogs, audio and video podcasts, and presentations. It's really intended to increase the visitor's understanding of living longer and living well. We want to help establish new habits to support a physically and mentally healthy lifestyle. So be sure to visit our site at living2100.club. And now, speaking of supporting a physically and healthy lifestyle, I'm happy to introduce today's guest, Dr. Ed Berry. Ed Berry is a board-certified chiropractic orthopedist and certified laser pain management physician. Dr. Berry has spent the past 38 years helping patients get back to all the things they used to do. Over that time, Dr. Berry utilized traditional chiropractic techniques as well as laser therapy to treat a variety of conditions, including arthritis, sciatica, spinal stenosis, hip pain, back and neck pain, and carpal tunnel syndrome. Many years ago, while Dr. Berry was exercising in the gym, he was drawn to a curious apparatus that was specifically designed for toning the abdominal muscles. What made this piece of equipment so interesting was in the design and movement. A bench was fitted with a pivotal bearing in the midpoint of the table so the user could alter the plane of movement in the abdomen as the user contracted upward, creating resistance to both the anterior and oblique muscles in the abdomen. That got him thinking about the possibility of creating a device that combined the two movements of flexion and traction for the lower back. And that's when the seed for LIFT was planted. This device, with all of those years of development, refinement, and engineering, Dr. Berry is now proud to introduce LIFT to patients all over the world. Dr. Berry, we're honored to have you as our guest today.
Well, thanks so much, Joel. I really, it's a great pleasure for me to be on the show with you.
Great. Well, let's get started. Let's just begin with a little description of your background and maybe the types of patients you work with.
Sure. My training as a chiropractic physician really prepared me to dedicate my entire professional career to eradicating pain in patients without drugs and without surgery. And we recognize as chiropractors that pain is what motivates most patients to even come into a doctor's office in the first place. And usually, that pain is precipitated by something in what we call the musculoskeletal realm. Those are things like muscle, joints, ligaments, and especially the spine, which is our main area of focus as chiropractors. And we specifically use manual methods, but also other therapeutic modalities to accomplish the best outcome for the patient in terms of alleviating the pain. And my first encounter with this type of pain was when I was about 16 years old, and I wanted to play football so badly when I was a freshman in high school, and I was playing against guys that were so much bigger than me. I was 99 pounds growing into a 6'2" frame, but I loved the game, and my father didn't talk me out of it, and I started to develop all kinds of aches and pains that prohibited me from actually trying to play. Wow. He took me to a gentleman who was very, very instrumental and very effective, who was a physical therapist, who introduced me to manual methods. He was amazing, and he spent a lot of time talking to me, understanding the problem, and within a couple of visits, I was 100%, and I was fascinated by that particular approach. And as I began my road of discovery to this, I spoke with many chiropractors, and I found that they could actually accomplish more because they were plenary care licensed physicians. They were seeing patients initially without a referral. At that time, physical therapists in New Jersey had to have a referral from a medical doctor. Chiropractors could see patients, you know, coming in by referral. So it seemed like a much more desirable approach, and that's what basically drew me to that profession. Mm-hmm.
Sure, sure. So you're both a chiropractor and an orthopedist.
It's a specialty within chiropractic that basically involves postgraduate study, which involves a deeper understanding of the typical orthopedic complaints that are seen in a chiropractor's office. And the whole purpose of that is really to give the clinician a better understanding about these conditions so he's better enabled to design adequate treatment protocols to produce a better outcome for the patient. So I went on for that postgraduate study to try to achieve that greater degree of understanding and to be able to accomplish more for patients.
Sure. Okay, so that's a specialty unto itself, the chiropractic orthopedist.
Within the profession, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Okay. So I'm just curious, what is the difference if one was just as singularly trained as a chiropractor versus someone who's trained as an orthopedist? How do they differ?
Well, the methods that they would use would be essentially the same in terms of manual methods and physiological therapeutics, but the orthopedist would probably have a much better or amplified understanding of the condition and is prepared to go a little bit deeper in terms of trying to understand what is the best approach and what is the most efficacious or most efficient method to treat that condition.
Okay, so I can appreciate your opening comments there about providing these services without surgery, without reliance on too much medication. I mean, we've all heard about the over reliance on opioids for pain management. I think there's still
it's a very, very big problem, and essentially. And a lot of people don't realize this, but lower back pain has become the number one reason for prescription of opioids in a doctor's office today. And there's a phenomenal number of people that are given these prescriptions, and they're a lot more dangerous than I think that even a lot of practitioners really fully appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just heard a story this morning on NPR about the continued deaths and overuse of the opioids. I think this year, or within the last 12 months, another 70,000 people have died from overdoses of these drugs. So it's you're right, it is a serious problem. But that's another conversation, I think. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So it's the number one reason, the lower back pain, the number one reason for prescriptions. Yeah. And how about laser pain management? What is that?
Well, laser, the study of therapeutic lasers has really ramped up within about the last 10 years. Laser is basically an acronym for light amplification by the stimulated emission of light. Now, not to give a science seminar here, but everybody knows about the process of photosynthesis, you know, from grade school, where you have that green chlorophyll in the plant leaf that's capable of absorbing sunlight. And that basically allows the plant to produce all of the energy that it needs for growth and production. We actually have the same capacity in the cells in our body, vis-a-vis a little organelle in the cell that's called the mitochondria, which they refer to as the cell factory. And this little organelle, this mitochondria, has little structures on the inside called chromophores, and they are actually capable of absorbing light energy the same way that the green chlorophyll on the plant leaf is capable of absorbing sunlight. The issue is having a source of light that will penetrate to a significant depth to get into that and create that chemical reaction. And that's exactly what therapeutic lasers do. Mm-hmm. They use a near-infrared intensity of light. That's probably on a scale of between 600 and 1,000 nanometers, which is the unit of scale they use to measure wavelength. And they use enough power to get that light energy to penetrate below the surface of the skin. And the therapeutic lasers that are available for practitioners today can actually penetrate about 4 or 5 centimeters. Now, for practitioners like chiropractors who are treating a lot of musculoskeletal problems, that's actually perfect because it gets to the depth of most of the muscles, ligaments, and especially the discs in the spine, which are the cause of a lot of lower back problems, to successfully treat those conditions painlessly. And what happens in that chemical reaction when the laser light hits that tissue is it creates a reaction where more oxygenated blood flows into the area to speed up the healing process significantly. It also allows the cell to produce more anti-inflammatory chemicals to allow the inflammation to subside. And there have been studies now that show that it can actually speed up the healing in tissue on the order of 300%. And this is done, again, painlessly with no heat and no side effects to the patient.
Wow, that's a great explanation. Thank you. So the light, these cells, the chromophores, can absorb this light energy from the laser beam, and that produces the healing. It speeds the healing of the tissue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. And it's not new. I mean, I'm sure it's being more and more specialized and refined, but laser treatment has been around.
Yeah. They've been doing studies on therapeutic laser, I think, starting in the 70s, and it's become more and more sophisticated as they've kind of harnessed that science. And a lot of athletic teams now are using lasers. I would like to see more general practitioners and more chiropractors and more physical therapists using laser. I guess the issue is that it is a very expensive technology, and I think a lot of doctors are probably disinclined to invest in that, as well as to get the education necessary to be able to apply that therapeutic modality successfully.
Sure, yeah, it requires some additional certification or credentialing, I'm sure. So where would someone go for laser pain management? Is that like a specialty pain clinic or pain center? I take it not all MDs.
I actually studied with a mentor, a gentleman who was a former laser engineer with NASA, who actually, when he left that profession, became a chiropractor. And he was actually building and designing lasers, and he was a fascinating individual. And he basically taught me probably everything I know about lasers. And I eventually took a certification course that was offered down in Florida several years ago, so that I could make sure that I had the appropriate training necessary to be effective.
Great. So is this treatment modality available at pain clinics, or how far does someone have to go to?
If someone were to Google laser treatment, they would probably find a practitioner in their area was equipped to offer that.
Great. Well, thanks for that. So I'm curious about your patients. You have a private practice? Do you see individual patients?
Yes, we see a whole realm of problems, and the laser has really enabled me to treat a lot more problems than I did early on in my practice because it has so many different applications. But I really specialize and always have specialized in lower back injuries, especially disc problems, because those are generally the more serious conditions and the limiting conditions that prevent people from actually enjoying their daily activities of life.
I see. Okay, so a variety of patients, a variety of ages too, I'm sure. What's the age range?
The very old. Usually, in late teens, early 20s, on into 70s and 80s especially for those in the older age group that want to remain active and who are experiencing a lot of physical issues that may create pain for them and limit their activity.
Sure. So lower back pain, I'm sure, is a chronic condition for many older adults, as you said. So what are some of the precipitating factors, or what contributes to this kind of condition?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. Aging is one of the prime motivators for lower back pain, and principally because as we age, the main structures in the spine, which we call the discs, which are essentially like shock absorbers in the spine, the circulatory channels, or the blood vessels that bring oxygenated blood into those structures, shrivel up and go away by the time we're in our 30s. So what happens is the discs undergo a very slow dehydration process, which makes them dry out. So whereas initially in our earlier years, the disc has the consistency of jelly, as we get older, it takes on the consistency of a dried toothpaste, which makes it much more susceptible to injury. And that's what leads to a lot of the problems that people have related to the lower back. Weight-bearing pressure on top of that from injuries or from prolonged sitting will accelerate that, and it will generate premature degenerative changes, which generally lead to immobility and pain and loss of function.
So is it the blood flow that is reduced or diminished with aging?
As far as the disc is concerned, and also as these joints stiffen from lack of movement and patients are disinclined to move, it creates a vicious cycle of pain and irritation where they lose more and more mobility, and that loss of mobility adds to the stiffness and the accelerated degenerative change. So you want to be able to try to break that cycle for patients as quickly as possible and try to get that healing process going so that they can regain some of that mobility and halt the progress of it so that you can go forward from there. And that's where a lot of the therapeutic protocols that I used in my practice were so helpful, and especially with the laser and with using mobilization techniques involving traction.
Yeah, all right, that's great information. I'd like to pursue this a little bit more. It's time to take a short break, Dr. Berry. Before we pause, though, I want to remind our listeners about my new book, Living Longer is the New Normal. Now that we're living longer, how do we live our best years and remove our self-limiting beliefs about aging? So pick up a copy on Amazon today. I think it's an uplifting read about successful aging and staying positive. And just a reminder to all of our listeners, if you have questions for Dr. Berry, please email them to info@living2100.club or call them into 866-472-5792. Thanks. We'll be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Visit the Living to 100 Club to experience the creative spirit, inspiration, and wellness information that you're looking for to maintain a healthy lifestyle, promote mental and physical fitness, and allow you to take control of your future. You'll find links to leading aging organizations and see our series of blogs. Get details about our weekly radio show and schedule of upcoming guests. Sign up to be a club member to receive newsletters and radio announcements and a copy of our member handbook, or opt for an annual premium membership with special access to our secure member forum and opportunities to ask the experts, plus transcripts of show recordings and other members-only offers. Visit the Living to 100 Club website for awareness, insights, and independence. Find us at livingto100.club. That's livingto100.club.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are listening to the Living to 100 Club with Dr. Joe Casciani. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to info@livingto100.club. Now, back to this week's show.
All right, we're back. Thanks to everyone for staying with us. We're talking today with Dr. Ed Berry about lower back pain. Ed, we were just talking about the kind of effects that aging can produce on the back, the discs, the all the changes that can occur with the reduced blood flow. I'm curious about what kind of lifestyle, what kind of lifestyle factors also would contribute to this?
Well, I think probably the biggest for me as a practitioner, at least related to lower back, is obesity and sitting. In our culture, in our society, you know, it seems to be that obesity is increasing in our culture, mm-hmm. and especially due to the COVID crisis, we're doing more and more sitting, and the two kind of feed off of one another, and it's unfortunate, but those are two things that I think really can precipitate additional problems for people that are already going down that road, either as a result of aging or because they've had some type of injury or some type of other problem that has caused them to be to have a chronic situation.
Mm-hmm. So the obesity, the sedentary lifestyle. Do we know if diet plays a role at all?
I think it does. You know, as we get older, you know, we have to be a little bit more careful. And as we become less active, we're not burning as many calories and we're not burning as much fat. So exercise really becomes critically important. And I think most of us, you know, get to a time in our life where maybe we're a little tired and we don't want that much activity, or we shy away from that activity. And it's an important aspect of lifestyle, especially as we grow older. We need to keep moving. We need to have some type of activity that we can engage in for at least 30 minutes a day, and preferably every day, where we can control that tendency to be a little bit overweight to avoid those problems.
Sure, sure. So prevention also plays a role too. I see we have a couple questions that came in by email. One person is asking, does anyone escape from having low back pain as they age?
Well, that's interesting. We estimate that probably at any given time in this country, about 80 million people suffer from lower back pain. Now, it's possible. But you would have had to lead a very cloistered life not to experience some of the problems. And I put myself in that category because, you know, one of the things that patients always ask me when they come in to treat for these conditions is, you know, do you ever suffer from this? And I can be very honest with them in telling them I suffer from just about every condition I've ever treated in the office
course.
With respect to the lower back. And it gives me a proper frame of reference for this. So I would say that for somebody to go through their entire life without any issues related to the lower back, they are a very fortunate person indeed.
Mm. Mm. So pretty rare, pretty unusual.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. One other question. Do you recommend any specific mattress for back pain?
Everybody's preferences in that regard are a little bit different. Some people are comfortable with very, very firm, almost rock hard, and other people like to have some cushioning. I like a traditional mattress that has a lot of coils, spring coils in it, but to give you the support, and then it has a nice, comfortable, padded top to it to give you that feeling of comfort. And, you know, we can debate whether or not the foam mattresses are good, you know, the pure foam mattresses are good. I think people have to try mattresses and make sure that the manufacturer has a return policy if it's not, if it doesn't stack up to what they think should be comfortable for them.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure. Yeah, so largely personal preferences, but those are good recommendations. Yeah. So let me ask you, we talked about lifestyle factors, but working from home, people are spending more time at home and working at a computer, even at their desk in an office. But if people are spending a lot of time, you know, just working at a desk, what are some of the risks there? What are some of the recommendations you can offer?
Well, this is a very, very big problem today, aggravated by the pandemic crisis. And it's interesting. There was recently a study that was done of people between the ages of 25 and 30, evenly split between male and female. And these are people, these are young patients that, for the most part, have no morbidities with respect to lower back pain. You know, that they're feeling pretty good. And they had them sitting continuously in a normal flexed spine position. And after 15 minutes, they started to experience discomfort. And the reason for that is because when you're sitting in the upright position, you have a poor distribution of the weight-bearing effects of gravity and the upper body on those discs in the lower back. And you also have, because of that, an increased recruitment of the supporting musculature in the lower back, and that causes fatigue. So all of those elements create that discomfort in the lower back. And the longer you stay in that position, the worse off it's going to get for you. So what I generally recommend for people in this situation is that there's no substitute for periodically getting up and walking around to take some of that pressure off, because when you're standing, you actually have less weight-bearing pressure on the spine. In fact, they measured this, and they found that there was roughly four times more loading pressure in the sitting position on the discs than there was in the standing position. And duplicating what I call passive pelvic tilt. Now, anybody who drives in their car today, most cars have what they call a seat recline mechanism, and the actual, the part that you're sitting on, it can incline. And when you adjust that, when you're driving, to make the front of the seat tilt up and the back of the seat go down, as well as adjust the lumbar support out so that it hits the small of your back, it creates a very, very relaxing effect. So if you're on a long drive and you increase that seat tilt and you adjust that lumbar, you can almost feel your back breathing with relief from the pressure that was building up. And you can easily duplicate that at home when you're sitting if you get a little wedge-shaped cushion and put it on your seat so that the thick edge is at the front by your knees, right at the edge of the seat, and the narrow part is back. And then you roll up a towel and place it behind your lower back to give you that support in the lumbar spine. And then that actually duplicates that passive pelvic tilt that gives you that sensation of relief.
Sure. So the car seat, the poor part that's below our thighs is raised higher than the back of the seat.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And same in a chair or any type of sitting position.
And they have plenty of orthopedic chairs that are available if folks want to spend the extra money on those chairs. But that's just a very simple way of duplicating that, you know, which is relatively easy. You can buy one of those wedge-shaped cushions in a place like Pep Boys, or even in a store like Relax the Back that sells cushions like that, and grab a rolled-up towel from the laundry.
Sure. And then the new desks that are out that allow us to stand up raises our whole platform, surface for computers and keyboards.
Exactly. And those are fine. You know, if they're a little bit large and unwieldy, I don't know if they're great for home use. But in the office, I think it's becoming more and more popular. And for that reason, that there seems to be a little bit less weight-bearing pressure on those critical joints in the lower back in that position than there is in sitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it doesn't put all that extra pressure on the back when we're sitting. And I've seen those posture correctors as well. They're like straps that fit around your shoulders and force you to stand up straight. Is this something that is connected to the lower back pain?
I have seen that. And to the extent that, you know, we look at the spine, when we do postural evaluations of patients, we're looking at what we call the gravitational weight-bearing line. So if we're looking at a person from the side, we look at the line that should go from the ear, from the center of the ear, through the shoulders, through the hips, all the way down to the ankles. And we want to see all those points line up. And as we get older, as the muscles get weaker, sometimes there's some slumping. For taller individuals, they tend to lean their head and their neck down a little bit further. And sometimes that additional support by way of a brace to kind of correct that will artificially reduce some of the pressure on those critical areas in the spine. The problem with that is that it's just artificial. And a better approach is to try to get the individual to strengthen the muscles that will rebalance the spine and create that neutral position that keeps the pressure off. And that's really a more desirable, but at least as a temporary measure, yeah, those supports are very, very helpful.
Mm-hmm. So how do you strengthen those muscles? Is this like what we're talking about with the core, strengthening our core? Are those the muscles you're referring to?
Basically, muscle strengthening exercises, and it takes a practitioner to be able to identify those muscles that are critical for that area of support and then try to instruct the individual in how to do the appropriate exercise. And it may be using a resistance band, an elastic band, or a small hand weight, or even just a postural exercise. And one of the things that I used to do for patients with the neck is have them take a very soft ball and place it on the wall, and they could do resistance exercises that way in different phases of motion, in different postures, to try and strengthen the muscles in the neck. Very easy exercise to do. All they have to do is get that soft ball that they can use, and they can create as much resistance as they want as they move the head and the neck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So a lot of different types of exercises to strengthen those muscles.
And it's a really critical aspect of patient care, because as we age, we lose muscle mass at a very rapid rate. And that is one of the biggest contributing factors to degenerative conditions as we get older. So keeping the muscles strong and developing that kind of tolerance to resistance exercise as much as possible, I think is very important as we age.
Mm-hmm. So I took a look at your website, baack2.com. I mean, you have a lot of information there. Can you tell us about this site and what's available?
Well, BAC2 is a company that I founded a year and a half ago in a desire, and this really sprung out of my desire to provide people with a safe and easy-to-use device to support some of the clinical treatment methods that I was using in the office. And the purpose here was to enable patients to have more control over their course of treatment. In other words, when patients come in and treat clinically, we expect and they expect to get them out of acute pain. But in many cases, when there's a chronic condition, it requires some type of supportive care or maintenance. Now, that may require repeated visits into the office or continuing care on some basis. I wanted to provide patients with a device that they could use at home and take control over the course of their therapeutic improvement that would be very easy for them to use and provide that type of therapeutic relief that they were looking for without having to come back into the office, without having to go into the therapist or take medication or get involved with more invasive procedures. And that really gave birth to the idea of that device that you see on the website, the Lift.
Mm-hmm. Right. So encouraging people really to take more responsibility for their own management, for their own health, and helping them to have the aids or the tools or the devices that allow them to maintain that independence.
Yeah. Because when you understand your condition and you have the tools necessary to take control, you are more motivated to do that and to be compliant with that and design a program for yourself to keep you out of pain and to keep you functioning normally.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I certainly support that approach 100%. The more we can do for ourselves and take responsibility for staying healthy and, again, getting the assistance and taking that on ourselves, that allows for our, I think, improved psychological well-being, our confidence, and our just movement forward and continuing to make it over those hurdles that I talk about. We always face hurdles and we always face obstacles, and the more we can do for ourselves to kind of push forward, the better. And I commend you for that. That's a great model.
It provides patients with a great sense of empowerment, when they have the understanding and the wherewithal to comply with that.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can talk after our break. We'll talk a little bit more about the Lift product that you've developed. But for right now, it's time to pause for a break. This is Joe Casciani. You're listening to the Living to 100 Club radio program on the Voice America Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Visit the Living to 100 Club to experience the creative spirit, inspiration, and wellness information that you're looking for to maintain a healthy lifestyle, promote mental and physical fitness, and allow you to take control of your future. You'll find links to leading aging organizations and see our series of blogs. Get details about our weekly radio show and schedule of upcoming guests. Sign up to be a club member to receive newsletters and radio announcements and a copy of our member handbook, or opt for an annual premium membership with special access to our secure member forum and opportunities to ask the experts, plus transcripts of show recordings and other members-only offers. Visit the Living to 100 Club website for awareness, insights, and independence. Find us at livingto100.club. That's livingto100.club.
Sometimes it just seems that nobody understands. There's one individual who can help. If you're living with somebody who faces challenges such as autism, Asperger's, or other exceptional needs, you'll want to tune into Solutions and Strategies with Dr. Sean. Living the Challenge. Together, we'll uncover a variety of solutions to the challenges faced by individuals, their families, and teachers. Listen live every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to the Living to 100 Club with Dr. Joe Casciani. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to info@livingto100.club. Now, back to this week's show.
All right, we're back. Thanks to everyone for staying with us. We're talking today with Dr. Ed Berry, chiropractic orthopedist physician. Ed, we were just talking about the product that you developed and helping people to feel that sense of empowerment over managing their own health and improvement. So tell us about the Lift product that you've developed.
Well, the Lift is a very simple device. And what we wanted to do was designed to incorporate the combined dynamic movements of flexion and distraction, or traction, for the lumbar spine. These are the two movements that have proven, at least over the years, in terms of practicing and treating patients with these types of chronic lower back conditions that seem to be most therapeutic, especially for patients who are in the older age group, 55 years and older. And what distraction of the lumbar spine, that stretching or opening, alternating, opening and closing, is so therapeutic for the discs in the spine, because the discs, as we had mentioned before, which don't really have a good blood supply after the age of 30, you have to have some way of getting that oxygenated blood to get the disc to heal when it's become injured, either as a result of injury or from degenerative arthritis. And this way, by opening and closing the disc, you're actually creating that sponge effect where you can soak up more oxygenated blood from the surrounding tissue. Mm-hmm. And specifically for the disc, that means drawing it from the marrow of the adjacent vertebrae to which it's attached. And this can be done very easily when you duplicate these movements. And what happens is the patient basically lies on the floor. They support their knees up on a little knee bolster, and grabbing a handle attached to a carriage arm, they pull the handle down, and their knees on the knee bolster allow that. It raises the hips and the pelvis up, lifting the pelvis off the floor, flexing the lower back, and opening up all of those vertebral joints and the discs in the spine. And they can repetitively do this motion to create that pumping action in the spine to get that blood circulating into the discs, as well as open up and separate the joints behind the disc, which we call the facet joints. And those are like the outriggers on a canoe. Everybody knows that Hawaiian canoe that goes to the surf, and those guys paddle it real fast, so they have outriggers. Those facet joints kind of guide the planar movement of the spine in support of the discs. And when the discs go bad, the facet joints go bad. So what you're doing is you're addressing the key and critical joints that are involved in so many chronic low back pains simultaneously. Now, people can do the exercise in a very comfortable lying down position on their back, performing repetitions very effortlessly, because it was designed ergonomically to provide little mechanical effort to do that. Or they can hold the handle down and create a sustained traction. So there are actually two therapeutic actions in one device. And by using this device 15 to 20 minutes a day, you can actually do it while you're watching television, do it before you go to bed, and it really helps to maintain and alleviate a lot of these chronic problems and keep the lower back as healthy as possible.
Hmm. Wow. So it opens, as you say, opens and closes that space, so it's kind of decompressing the space on the discs.
Exactly.
So it relieves that pressure, but it also allows the blood to flow more effectively.
Correct, because just think of the action of the sponge. If you stick a sponge in water and you squeeze it while it's underwater, you'll squeeze all the water out. And as soon as you let go, it's going to soak all the water back in. That's exactly what happens to the disc and between the vertebrae, where it allows blood. Now, but the interesting thing is, and we talked about laser before, when I treated patients using this type of approach with a special table that was designed to duplicate these movements, we applied laser simultaneously. So not only were you getting the physical pumping of blood into the disc, but you were using the laser to actually facilitate that. Because one of the things that the laser does from studies that we've seen is it actually has the ability to create new blood vessels into tissue that was formerly devoid of those structures. So the laser was very, very instrumental in assisting that type of action.
Hmm. You're restoring some of the tissue, actually, then.
Exactly.
That had become compressed. Hmm, that's great. That's great. That's just mechanically, I can understand the process there, where you're separating those discs and the pressure, and opening it up and allowing the blood flow to come back, and then at the same time relieving the pain. But I can see where the blood flow can really enhance the healing of those discs.
It's really the key to any therapeutic intervention, because without that oxygenated blood, it's impossible for tissue to heal appropriately. So that it's really critical.
Mm-hmm. So it can be used with older adults. Are there any contraindications?
None whatsoever, because you're lying down, you're not hanging upside down, like some of the devices that you see marketed today. And you're in a very, very well-supported position, so there's no danger of falling. And there are no medical contraindications for this. For patients who are accustomed to using or have tried to use a gravity inversion table where you hang upside down, for people who have high blood pressure, or they might have vertigo, or they may have a heart condition, it's very, very difficult for them to use that device. That is not the case with the lift. The lift would be very easy for even those patients to be able to use effectively.
Sure, sure. So you must have some cases where it's been shown to be very helpful and therapeutic. Can you tell us about any?
Yes. Well, we're doing pilot studies currently for patients, and we've had patients that have had chronic lower back pain that after even only about 2 weeks of using this on a regular basis, they can experience a difference. They're not taking as much over-the-counter medication. They don't feel the need to have therapeutic intervention. I've even had patients who have had knee and hip pain say that they've actually seen improvement in those areas as well, but it was designed specifically to address lower back conditions.
Mm-hmm. So some examples you can give us, any particular case?
Well, I have, there's a patient that I recall, his name was Tony. He was a state worker from Trenton. He came all the way down from Trenton to see me here in South Jersey. And he was really a basket case. He had injured his back in a work-related incident working for the state by lifting a very heavy solar panel. And, of course, this became a workers' compensation case, and he was not getting adequate care under that program. They basically misdiagnosed him. He was having severe low back pain and pain radiating down into his leg. And I happened to watch Tony getting out of his truck when he came to the office, and I've never seen anybody in so much pain. And it just enormous effort for him to just walk from the vehicle into the office across the parking lot. And once we evaluated him and got a history, we realized that he had been misdiagnosed and that the problem was really in the disc itself, and that's what was causing the sciatic pain down into his leg. And within about 3 weeks, he responded extremely well to this combination of flexion and distraction coupled with the laser. And he was walking almost perfectly normally without any pain. And interestingly, he told me afterwards that he had not seen his older Italian mother, who lived by herself in Trenton, since he had come to treat with me. And he went to visit her after his treatment when he was walking normally. And when he walked in the door, she looked at him, gasped, and fell to her knees and said, "Tony, I prayed to God for a miracle, and my prayers have been answered." And he was going to tell her, about the treatment, but he said, I didn't want to spoil the moment. I wanted to savor. Sure. I wanted to allow her to savor the moment.
Yeah, let's stay with that for a while. Yeah,
these techniques are very, very effective, and that's what we've essentially tried to do with the lift and its design and application.
Yeah, well, so I have a couple questions that have come in while we're talking. One person is asking, will treatment with a lift device eliminate pain or just help to manage it?
I think it has the capacity to do both, depending on the nature of the problem. I think for patients who have had chronic lower back pain and need ongoing care, it's an ideal device to support that relief. And to keep you out of acute pain and to keep you from regressing back to that. And for some patients with some conditions, especially with disc problems, degenerative arthritis, I believe it has the capacity to eliminate pain, possibly even without any treatment. And for a device like this, there really is no harm in using it and trying it, because it was designed not to cause any additional problems. It's that safe to use. And again, because the movement, the dynamic movement of flexion and distraction, are the favored movements for the lower back. Those are the movements that are easiest for people in that age group to be able to conduct on their own.
Hmm. So is the product available now, or when would it be available?
We anticipate that it will be in production this fall. So for people who go onto the website and leave their email address, we'll keep them up to date as to the progress.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, well, thank you for that question, Kyle. I appreciate your sending that in to us. We have another question, a little bit unrelated, but interesting one. Why are MDs reluctant to refer patients to chiropractors?
Well, there's a historical aspect to this, and it's a very, very interesting question. But back in the day, there was a great deal of competition with chiropractic and the medical community over patients. And here you had a group of practitioners who were treating patients manually without the intervention of drugs and surgery, competing with allopathic doctors who used those methods. And so there was a kind of conflict of interest, and there was actually a concerted effort. And this came out in a major lawsuit against the AMA aimed by the American Chiropractic Association back in the 70s. And they found out through testimony that medical doctors in their orientation were actually advised not to refer patients to chiropractors. Mm. And unfortunately, that has kind of held over decades since that. But it's actually rooted in historical fact. So I think now that there is a much better understanding of these methods, and I've noted that just a couple of years ago, I think the University of Pittsburgh Hospital basically has mandated that no patients be accepted for spinal surgery until they've been evaluated by a chiropractor. And I think because the statistics say that less than 5% of surgical patients, or less than 5% of the time, surgery is really indicated in conditions like this.
Well. Yeah, good. So that's a great policy, because all those alternative evaluations, I can see where, you know, physicians may be too quick to recommend or follow up with more invasive procedures. So having some alternative approach makes a lot of sense.
And studies are showing that they're only really necessary in the most dire cases.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So it looks like we're about out of time for today. For those who might want to contact you, how can they do that?
Well, they can go onto our website, www.back2, that's with two A's, and the number 2.com, and leave their email addresses, and we'll contact them. We'll keep them up to date on the progress of Lyft as far as production is concerned, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that any of your listeners might have additionally. It may take me a little time, but we'll try to get back to everybody.
Sure. Yeah, if I have any other questions, I'll be sure to forward them to you, and we can respond to them that way. Well, thanks very much. This has been a very thoroughly enjoyable show, I must say, and I thank you for sharing your information, your recommendations, your insights, and maybe we'll get you back on another show in the future. And good luck. Best of luck to you with Lyft when that comes out. I hope you're very successful with it. Sounds like a great device.
It's been my great pleasure to be a guest, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Take care. Bye. Thanks to all of our audience for tuning in today, and be sure to be with us in our coming weeks. We have an exciting lineup for this summer.
Thank you for being part of the Living to 100 Club. We hope you'll join Dr. Joe Casciani again next Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Until next week, stay on the right track to mental and physical fitness.